Welcome to the Get Wealthy Podcast, where wellness doesn't suck. I'm your host, Michelle Smith.
We feeling wealthy, we getting healthy, we feeling wealthy, we getting healthy,
we drinking. Welcome to the Get Wealthy Podcast. I am your host, Michelle Smith, and I am joined by my junior temporary co-host, Brad. Welcome, Brad.
Hello. Not sure about junior. I think you've had better adjectives.
Oh, would you prefer senior? You are older than I am.
Yes, I will take senior. Thank you.
All right, senior. But I know you. You're wearing that as a badge of wisdom and honor.
Of course.
Not just age.
Of course.
Well, happy holidays.
Well, thank you. Happy holidays to you, too.
Oh, thanks. Do you think that if somebody's just tuning in that they would have any idea we're actually husband and wife with our formal greetings?
Probably not, because we ask each other questions like we don't know the answers to them.
I mean, yes, we experience the same. We have the same days, but maybe not the same experience in
Of course. Now you're getting all philosophical on us.
Did you enjoy your experience in your day today? That's how I'm going to start.
Yes.
Checking in with you. Fantastic.
Thanks.
Well, speaking of holidays, They are just around the corner.
Yes, they are.
And I'm really excited. You know, I'll speak to our holidays this year. We've decided to kind of pare them back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Not pare them back in the sense that we're not going to celebrate holidays or, you know, lean into the spirit of the season, but that we really kind of realized we needed to minimize some of the more extraneous components of it.
Scaled back, maybe.
Scaled back a little bit so that we could lean in more to the meaning.
Yes.
And enjoy it. We started talking about this back in September, you know, for two reasons. One, COVID. We knew we were going to be able to see family in the way that we're used to. Mm-hmm. But also, my book is coming out 4 days after Christmas, which last time, if you remember, I wasn't around for like almost a month. I was kind of.
It's definitely a busy time.
Yeah. And so I wanted to make sure that I gave myself enough space to be able to celebrate the holiday and enjoy this time as a family, but then also be able to do my book justice and put enough attention to that.
So it'll be celebrate the holiday and then
book.
Jump right into the book.
And then New Year's. And then our anniversary.
Great.
Oh, we got a big month coming.
I know.
So today's guest is Robin Conley Downs. I have known Robin for a few years now. She is author of The Feel Good Effect, which was a fantastic book, one of my favorites that came out this year. It is all about reclaiming your wellness by finding small shifts that create big change, which does that not sound like something we are all about here at Get Wealthy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's like right up our alley. So I invited Robin to come and chat with us about how we can take some of the techniques from her book on feeling good and these shifts that we can apply to this time of year so we can really enjoy our holiday and find, you know, purpose in it and feel good without feeling overwhelmed and what is the name of the like miser?
Scrooge.
Scrooge, right? We don't want to feel like Scrooge this time of year, which I think a lot of moms in our mind were like, oh my God, when is this over?
Yeah.
So really excited for this episode. I hope you guys find some tips. I know I already picked up a few and have applied them. So it's great. Without further ado, let's chat with Robin. Welcome to Get Wealthy. I am Michelle and joined here with Brad.
Hello.
And our guest, Robin Conley Downs, the author of The Feel Good Effect. Robin, welcome to Get Wealthy.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
First off, I am so thrilled. I feel like our friendship relationship has come full circle. Like we've been on each other's podcasts now. And I know you, Brad, you actually don't know this story. But Robin, I know you chatted about it. We chatted briefly on your podcast, but I feel it would be not serving my audience if we also didn't bring up the Howard Johnson on this one.
I'm intrigued.
Okay. So it was a few years ago, we went to Expo West, and anyone who's gone, it's a huge natural foods conference down in Anaheim, right outside of Disneyland. And the hotel rooms are zapped up like months and months in advance. And so the last ones standing are always like $600+. My friend Beverly and I went, we ended up at the Howard Johnson in like, I don't know, Fountain Valley or something. And Robin was able to score a hotel room. Or no, Robin, how did they messed up your reservation or something, right?
Like at the last minute, I had a reservation and then I'm sure I was the one that made the mistake. But either way, I ended up without a hotel room. I had a flight booked. I had the tickets. I was doing a bunch of events at this thing. And I realized like the day before that I didn't have a place to stay. And not only were there no places to be found, but even like an hour away, yeah, places were like $1,000 a night. And I was like, oh my gosh. So you and I had been friends online. And I was so desperate. And I texted you. I'm like, hey, Michelle, this is really awkward since we've never met in real life. But can I sleep on your floor of your hotel room?
Yeah. And it was funny because my friend was there and we were already sharing a bed because God forbid there was a hotel room with two beds. And so we just all had a big slumber party at the Howard Johnson, which was maybe a little bit like I've stayed in nicer.
Yeah. To clarify, it wasn't a nice, I think there's an in Anaheim, like near Disneyland, there's a nice Howard Johnson. This is not that.
No, this is a mojo.
There was like a giant hole in the wall in the lobby. And then I got lost trying to I was following you in the dark. I was following you there. I got lost. Anyway, this is to say like how Michelle is the real deal. For those of you who are listening, she's exactly like you would think. And it's not some kind of persona. It's real. And just so generous because you were like, of course you can stay with the Hojo with us. And then my husband was like, wait. So you're staying with this woman. How do you know her? I'm like, on the internet. We met on the internet.
Yes. Yeah, so if anybody listening ever wants to stay at a dive hotel, just hit me up. We're good.
But we actually had so much fun and I wouldn't trade it at all. And it's a really good story now. So
yeah.
The phrase I met them on the internet has changed a lot over the last probably 15 years.
And now we sleep together.
I mean, that's how Brad and I met on was through Match. So, yeah. And we sleep together now every night. Most nights.
Just kidding. Quarantine has been hard on all of us.
The couch gets better and better. Okay, Robin, as I mentioned, you are the author of The Feel Good Effect, which came out over the summer, correct?
Yeah, September 1st, so like right into fall.
Mm-hmm. I would love to chat with you a little bit more about some of the themes that you explore in this book, because when I saw that you had written this book and talked about, I mean, it's kind of what I'm trying to find through this podcast is reclaiming wellness and that it's not just about diet and exercise. And there's so many other things. It's really about, in my mind, at the root of it, our mindset. And what I want to explore with this podcast is ways we can start shifting that mindset to really lean into wellness and start feeling well again. So I'd love for you to chat about some of the themes in the book, but what I really want to explore is how can we apply this to this time of year? The holidays are traditionally chaotic and we are buying this, decorating this, doing this. And it's just for myself, I will say I feel like I lose so much joy over the holidays because I'm so busy doing. Mm. And I really think that there's a lot in this book that we can apply to this season so that we can really lean into it and feel good.
Yeah. I think there are. I feel like the book is like a handbook for, you know, leaning out of impossible expectations and life as productivity, you know, and
perfect way to say it. How can we, like, we're all talking about leaning in. How can we start talking about leaning out and finding meaning in that?
Right. And leaning into, you know, self-compassion and flexible thinking and gratitude and joy and the simple shifts that make big change, because it's really antithetical though to the wellness industry. And then also I would say the holiday season, and I'm, as someone wrote me the other day, they're like, I didn't know you were an anti-capitalist. And I'm like, well, I'm not an anti-capitalist. What I'm saying though is that when we are constantly feeling that we're not enough and searching for, you know, ways to be enough outside ourselves, then that becomes a problem. So certainly that might apply to, you know, thinking that if we buy the certain thing or, you know, spend the, enough money on the right product that will somehow be good enough. And we know that that's like a never ending cycle. We'll never get fulfillment there. But that might also be in your own mindset, like you mentioned, that if you never feel enough and you're looking for answers outside of yourself, you're likely to continue to strive and feel really bad. And that was one of the questions I sought to answer in the book. It's like, what is the pursuit of wellness making me well? And right. at the time, the answer was a clear no. But you could apply that too, is like the pursuit of the holiday season making me joyful. And if the answer is no, there's so much that we have agency and control over, even in this time when it feels like nothing's in our control. So that's a lot of what I try to do, is help people learn how to shift their mindset, like through science-based strategies, and then also to reframe and reclaim, like you mentioned, their strategies and routines and habits, so that they can ground themselves in what matters and let the rest go.
Right. Well, and I think you really hit that just now, is that I think, for the record, I will say I'm very pro conscious capitalism, not how it stands now, but, you know, conscious capitalism in the sense is traditionally how businesses perform consciously. But I also think as a consumer, conscious capitalism can go that way as well, being thoughtful and mindful about how we're exchanging our values, which is money for items or products or whatever. So I think that conscious capitalism is both consumer based and, you know, corporate based.
Right. And just conscious anything. I think that's a lot of what I promote overall, is like, when you can pause and pay attention and make intentional choices, then you reclaim the control, the agency, and you get to design the life that you want. So it doesn't mean that you don't buy anything, right? Like, I mean, you and I are sitting here selling our book. So The Feel Good Effect is available anywhere books are sold. But but it's like, I also want you to know what the book's about, why it might work for you. And then for you to know why it might be working for you, and why it might be something that you say, that's not what I need right now. Take what you need and leave what you don't.
Oh my gosh, that is something that we chat about pretty regularly here already, is that every wellness or health trend or topic is not meant for every single person. You don't have to be keto, taking ice baths while you're, what's the latest thing? I don't even know.
Supplements, and
you don't have to do it all.
Meditation and breathing practices. And I mean, the list can go on and on.
You've got to find things that work for you. So I'm completely in that. It's picking and choosing what you can really fit into and adapt your life. So kind of going back to the holidays and the spending and this and that and all of the extra, I think it's important is that we really do lose so much of that meaning in it when we're being dictated on how we have to do it, whatever that is. But like you said, yes, I'm buying presents for my kids and family and all of that, but it's some of the outside stuff that I think is getting us when we feel we have to, and whether that's external or internal, I think a lot of it internally. I'll speak as a parent this year. Brad and I had a conversation earlier this week. I had to sit down with the kids. I think that I'm trying to almost bubble wrap them from 2020 so much that they're becoming spoiled. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to make this Christmas the best Christmas ever.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of taking a step back from this and thinking, you know, it doesn't have to be that best Christmas isn't doing what everyone else dictates and expects. Like, it's about leaning into the moments and the meaning and the togetherness and the actual stuff that my kids will take forward, not just the crappy toy they'll play with, like the fur. What were those? Hatchimals. Oh my God.
Those are horrible.
I have two like strategies that I could offer that might be helpful to your listeners, and they're in the book, but I'm always happy to share them. So the first is the like four steps to shift your mindset. And I really think it applies to all things right now, which is just pause and pay. So the four steps are pause, pay attention, practice, and patience. But I really like to hone in on pause and pay attention and to build. I know you just did an episode on routines, morning routines, and I invite people to add pause, pay attention moments into their day, whether that's a morning routine, whether it's like Sunday afternoon in reflection or, you know, journaling. And you don't have to be like lighting candles and playing music and spending hours doing this. It's very practical for me. It's very pragmatic because without a pause, it's really easy to let things get out of hand and then they start unraveling and you feel out of control. But when you can pause and then pay attention, it allows you those moments to make different decisions. And the second piece, which is so relevant, Michelle, to what you were just saying, is the simple question, which is also in the book, but I feel like for the holidays, so relevant, is how can I make a should a good? And when you pause and pay attention and ask that one question, you might find that that actually changes everything.
I like that. I want to go back really quick because I know I'll forget about it. When you say pause, I completely agree. And I think there's moments in the day where I start feeling overwhelmed and stressed out, but I don't even have that mindfulness in that moment to pause. Are there any tricks or tactics that, or triggers that can kind of remind us and help us in those moments where we need that pause more than anything to kind of remember that?
Yes. So one of the things I teach a lot is a four-part daily wellness routine. So for me, the morning routine was a should. It was like, oh my God, this is getting so out of hand. And I have this kid and she's here all the time. And like, I can't do all this. So I decided, well, why does it all have to be in the morning? Because can it be throughout the day? So I do like a morning, a mid-morning, a mid-afternoon, and an evening, okay. Like a 5 to 10 minute wellness routine, whether that's like taking a walk or whatever it is, but it's actually pausing. It's forced pause sometimes. And so that could be an alarm on your phone. It could be a calendar reminder. It could be, you know, just like a little note on your computer. It could be tied to an event in your day, like after lunch, after breakfast, after dinner. Those are already in your day. So there's a lot of ways to do it depending on the kind of person that you are. But I think that like almost a forced pause at the beginning, mm-hmm. mindfulness only is just paying attention on purpose, yes. with kindness. And so it doesn't have to be like a grand separate part of your day. But at first, when you're first cultivating the practice, it does help to like actually say, today I'm going to take four breaks, four pauses to come back and remember what I care about or how I want to feel or some of, or my should to good. And that's like shown in the science to be really, really effective. But it doesn't take a long time and you don't have to like go sit and meditate in order for that to work.
Hi, Brad.
Hello, Michelle.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm ready to talk about something really near and dear to my heart.
Oh, all right. What do we got?
Would you like to know?
Of course.
Coconuts.
Coconuts.
Coconuts. You sound like a little old man. Coconuts. Yes, more specifically, real cocoa. You know I'm obsessed with real cocoa.
I could say you're loco for cocoa.
Oh, my gosh. Real cocoa makes some of the best coconut beverages on the planet, including their organic coffee creamers. They're creamy, frothy. They actually froth up when you put them in coffee and blend it up. You can make real lattes. They're dairy-free with no added sugar. The only plant-based coffee creamer that's made from MCT-rich coconuts and bottled at the source. That means within minutes of cracking the coconut, it's bottled so it tastes its freshest. They're currently carried at Erewhon and healthy stores near you. You can find them on Amazon. And lucky for you, Get Wealthy listeners get 15% off real cocoa creamers on Amazon when you use the coupon code GetWealthy15. All of this will be in the show notes. But really, Brad, you know I'm obsessed with their brand.
Yes. Yes, I do.
It's my favorite. Their creamers.
Yes, I do. I do know that.
Yes, you do. Their creamers are hands down best dairy-free creamer on the market, which says a lot. Yeah. So again, you guys, coupon code GETWEALTHY15 on Amazon when you check out. Right. Well, and I think that's what so many of us feel like, the pause is almost more intrusive than what we're feeling, and it almost can lend stress, but all we need to do is reframe what that pause looks like. And honestly, it's just taking breaks in our day. If you get to the root of it, like, our days start and mine like just go until the kids are asleep, and then I have my break. But
right.
I think us as humans weren't really designed to just not have that break.
And then it's always like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And if you can interrupt what's next, even like another way to do this, Michelle, would be many of us reach for our phones when we actually want a break. Oh, we're looking for something.
Yeah, I was just going to say that even the breaks that we take aren't really true breaks, you know?
And right.
That exact thing.
And especially for those.
Not a break.
No, it's not. And especially for someone like you, Michelle, who. It's like a mix of work and all these things. So I think that could be, it's not like to say that you have to stop looking at your phone, but it might be a reminder. I'm picking up my phone. Why am I doing that? I need a break. What could I do? What's a substitute for that? Whether it's, for me, often it's like sitting with a drink of choice. So that during the day might be a cup of tea and just actually savoring the thing for like 3 minutes.
I think we can all do 3 minutes a day without our phone. I don't think that's too much to ask. No.
It's hard though, Brad, at first, yeah, because yeah. you're, but I completely agree. It's like, but it's reminding yourself, I'm worthy of care. I'm worthy of rest. I'm worthy of break, taking a break. When I used to drive places in the before times, yeah. I drove places and I had, I call it a this then rule. So it was when this happens, then this happens. So when I take the keys out of the ignition, I would just do three inhales and exhales. And it was like a tiny pause, but it just reminded me, like, I don't have to, I was always, you know, when you turn your car off in the before times and then you're like, I have to do this. Now I need to do this. And it would remind me like, no, I don't. I can just sit here for a second.
Oh, I love, Brad will attest, like, he'll see me and I'll just be sitting in the car in the driveway. Yeah. Like 15 minutes alone and warm.
I see her out there and then like, I know what she's doing, but like, I try to keep the kids away. The kids like spot her out there, but she'll be there. I've seen her out there for like a half hour.
Well, now I call it a carcation. In the after times, it's just a carcation. Like, I'm not just taking my keys out. I'm just going and sitting in my car because it's like,
I told carcation. Brad, I'm like, I think I just want to go on a drive and listen to a podcast. Maybe I'll just drive to San Francisco and back and just by myself and listen to a podcast. It's a great carcation.
But see, Michelle, I feel like if people listen to themselves more on like, what do I need right now?
Yeah.
And they give themselves permission back to look at the phone because that feels productive.
Right.
Last back to that, like, life is productivity versus what if you know what you need, Michelle, like, I need a break. I need a drive. What if you just did that? You know, even a 10 minute right now, literally just a 10 minute drive, I find to be incredibly refreshing and a reminder of who I am or who I was before all of this. And we often know what those pauses could be. It's a lot of times about permission, and I don't need to give it to you. You kind of need to give it to yourself that it's okay to do things that are not quote unquote productive because they're actually contributing to how you want to feel.
Right.
Which is underlying like what your life is.
Yeah. Right. Which is essentially productive. We're just putting ourselves into that equation.
Yeah.
Like, how can we be productive for our own well-being?
Yeah.
So one thing I really have done for myself that I think is good too, is just like, and I think all of this kind of can somehow wrap back around to that, is just really paying attention in the moments. And I think that's something I've had to train myself to do, is that when I'm feeling off or out of alignment, taking that time to recognize that you are and being honest with what you need in that moment. So like one example of that is a minor one is that when I am scrolling on the internet, or we'll stick with that example, and I find myself feeling whether it's less than or stressed or annoyed is a big one this year. That is my trigger. If I'm feeling anything less than, that's my trigger to get off.
Mm.
So really paying attention to what my environment is dictating is, it's been really helpful. And I think taking that into the holiday season of like really just staying alert to when you're either doing something or somebody's bringing something to you. And if that isn't in alignment, recognizing that and then moving into one of those things that do feel good and taking that back.
Well, and so a lot of the work in the book is based on research and science and all these things. And self-compassion is a huge part of it. And one of the ways to cultivate self-compassion is to pause and pay attention and ask, how do I feel right now? And most of us don't learn that. And in fact, are actively discouraged because I think we worry that if people are aware of how they feel, then things might change. But the research is really clear on the power of that. All the good things come from self-compassion. So when you can pause, and you've already been doing it, Michelle, pause, pay attention, and ask, how am I feeling right now? And you know, okay, this is frustration. I know for me, there's been rage. I've had a lot of rage this year. So I'm like, wow, rage. And it's not even about fixing it. It's just acknowledging that's how I feel right now.
Yeah.
And maybe there's something I can do to, you know, change that. And maybe the self-compassionate thing is just saying, pause, pay attention, and how do I feel?
Yeah, acknowledging it. Because I think mm-hmm. so many of us don't acknowledge it and we just keep living through it and it builds. And when you can acknowledge it, it releases some of it. For myself, I find is when I can acknowledge my feeling, mm-hmm. and it's something I'm trying to teach the girls, is like, acknowledge it and move through it. Because what I don't want to do is just ignore it and stuff it and pretend like it didn't exist. But if you acknowledge it and you can move through that with grace and understanding for yourself, you grow from it mm-hmm. and evolve from that.
Well, we could give a holiday example. Like there's a lot of disappointment this year about things that we can't do that we want to do. And I think that there's this sort of like pervasive good vibes only like ethos in the wellness space that it's like just positive think your way out of it. And there's not a lot of science to support that. And in fact, it's actually pretty destructive. So
it's very counter, like it's the quickest way to just to go down a spiral.
Yes. Spiritual bypassing.
Yeah.
But instead,
your mortgage payment, it disappears.
Right. Well, you can positive think your way out of your mortgage payment. You didn't know that?
No, right. It's new to me. We'll have to do an episode on that one.
So instead, it's like you said, okay, I'm going to acknowledge that I'm really disappointed about, we usually go to the Nutcracker. It's a small thing, you know, with my little nieces and my daughter. And it's really special to me. And I know it's like silly, but it's also I'm truly disappointed in that about that. And I let myself feel disappointed before then, like you said, moving through it. And I as I moved through it, I've thought of another way that we can do it, but it was okay to just, and to my daughter, to tell her like, it's okay to be disappointed. This is super disappointing. You know,
that's something I honestly feel it's really made a change with our kids, is that encouraging them to feel their feelings and understand it. And I mean, I'm just now learning that at 40 to be able to start as a kid creating those mindsets, I think is huge.
Yeah. And when people ask me, how do I teach my kids self-compassion? You are already doing it, Brad and Michelle. You're so amazing. Whoa! Like
we're going to high five. No one can see it, but we just high five.
It's helping them to ask, to be aware of how they feel and then to honor that, how they feel, and not to like gaslight their feelings and tell them like, no, you're not disappointed. Everybody, or to tell them that other people have it worse.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I do talk to my daughter about how difficult it is for many people and that the gratitude piece is there, but I don't tell her like, you're not disappointed. Don't be disappointed.
Right. You know what I did the other day with our youngest, and it really helped, was she was going through a moment, and throughout this pandemic, all she's wanted is a puppy. So it's the end of the day, I'm putting her into bed, and she just got it in her head. She's just wanted this puppy, broke down, super hysterical. And I didn't want to tell her she was wrong. I didn't want her to not feel her feelings. But I also know in my head, as a grown-up, this is ridiculous. I'm like sitting here, like this is 30 minutes into it, of her crying now. So I finally said, I'm like, listen, I can sit here with you while you, because, you know, it was when rationalizing or, you know, I understand all this is out the window. And I just sat there with her and I said, listen, I'm going to sit with you while you feel these things. Like, feel them. I can't change them for you. We aren't getting a puppy, but I'll sit with you while you feel this.
Mm-hmm.
And the shift in her, like she still kept going because I didn't want to condone it any more than this half hour had already gone on. And I, you know, wanted her to realize her blessings and all of that. It wasn't working, but just sitting with them, letting them acknowledge how they feel and feel it, whether it's in our adult world, right or wrong, I could sense a shift in her and she started understanding what was happening. So,
and imagine if you really do that for yourself, Michelle.
I know. Michelle's
much more patient than I am too, which is.
Well, and Brad, like none of us, I don't think any of us grew up learning those strategies for ourselves. So it's really hard to show them to others. And granted, like for my own daughter too, it, at a certain point, I'm like, you know, you can, here's like the parameters of how this can go and you can cry, but like, that's not changing it. And also you can't, you know, there's certain things you can't do in this scenario, but I think if we can maybe start teaching our children, but then remind the value to ourselves of feeling the feelings, which seems so ridiculous and woo, but I, for those of you who are interested in like the science and research, it's really powerful. And, you know, even when my book came out, the day it came out, it's not really relatable to that many people, but just imagine that you work on a book for years. And really for me, it had been 20. And I had really had in my mind that I was going to, like what that day was going to be like, that I was going to go to a bookstore and see it in Powell's.
Yeah.
That I was going to, we were going to have a party. I was going to do book signing. And the day that it happened, of course, none of that happened. And in fact, this nothing good happened that day. Right. Yeah. And I told everyone in my family, I'm really disappointed today. I just really am. And everybody was mad at me because they were like pissed off that I wasn't great. Like, yeah, they're like, but you should be happy. And I said, you know what? I will get over this. I need one day to be disappointed. But I could clearly articulate to that, whether they liked it or not. I just said, let me have this, okay? Yeah. If it happened to you, you would feel the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
And the next day, I could fully recalibrate, reclaim, and find my gratitude. And since that day, I haven't felt that disappointment because I've readjusted my expectations. But when you can
need space to do that, and that's what it is. If you don't give yourself that space, you get stuck in it.
And how much longer would that disappointment have? How much longer would that have like hung around?
A long time. Yeah. Yes. And so it's like cultivating pause, pay attention. How are you feeling?
Yeah.
Honoring that. Then you move through it. Like if you want to talk about what does it really mean to be healthy or what is true health, wealthy. That's such a, I'm sorry to spoiler alert. You can't be a truly healthy person without this part.
No, absolutely. And I think that's what's inspired me to do this podcast is because I've started off my health and wellness journey focusing on food, you know, and eating all the good food in the world and working out fairly regularly. And I'm like, wait, is this wellness? Is this really wellness? Because it doesn't feel all that well on a lot of days. And I've started realizing even with the food component, like we can all do this Google search now and see what's healthy. I think generally most people know that driving through McDonald's every day isn't healthy and having like, you know, healthy proteins and vegetables, like we get it. But if you dig past that, it's the mindset that you cultivate that is going to dictate your choices on how you're viewing this and why you're doing it. So everything comes back to mindset and how we're feeling about ourselves. And the, like you said, Robin, the grace that we're giving ourselves.
Mm-hmm. My motto is gentle is the new perfect, which really is about getting rid of
Usher song. By the way. Hey, just so you know, he might be interested in that topic.
Usher, if you want it, give me a call. We can talk about it. Yeah. But I think like when you reframe using gentle, which for some people is like even a hard word to use because they've been taught to strive and push through and be really hard on themselves. But
we live in a hustle society right now. There are like these hustle memes and all of that is killing us.
Right. And people think if they're gentle or compassionate, they're going to lose their edge and they're not going to, you know, get things done. And really, again, the science doesn't support that. But perfectionism is really about impossible standards and mistake avoidance. And so for me, I just know that like if I can insert gentle instead of perfect, I can remind myself like I'm not really interested in impossible standards because by definition they're impossible. And I'm not really interested in living my life trying to avoid every possible mistake.
Yeah. Why do you think as a society we've leaned so much into this impossible hustle standard?
Can I break in real quick? Michelle literally has a mug on her desk that says hustle.
Gift from somebody. No. Speaking of book tours, at my launch party, they might be listening and now you're making fun of it.
No,
and
I'm
it
not has being nice a jerk. Memories. I just think that it's funny.
It is ironic. I'm sipping my coffee from it right now.
Let's just write gentle hustle next. Like you can just write gentle over it. Oh, well,
great idea. I'm going to, and I'm going to take a picture and I'm tagging you.
So I think in the book, I do talk a lot about like what led us to striving mindset or this hustle push through mentality. Some of it is just hardwired. Like we're actually, our brain, like I have a background in neuroscience. Some of our brain is just hardwired toward perfection, all or nothing, and comparison. However, and that, some of that is actually helpful and was designed to keep us safe, you know. But in when you combine like the culture, if you are in the US or kind of the West in general, I think with the addition of individualism, which is what the US is based, the kind of a paradigm of the US, which is pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, as we talked about capitalism and the marketing machine that suggests that like the way that a lot of the marketing machine runs is that if you don't feel good enough, you buy things.
More.
Right. So that's really how we got here. And I have done a lot of research that would support that, that it's those things together that have put us at this breaking point that I think then with the pandemic have really pushed us over the edge. Because that comes up, that striving mentality is in wellness, it's in work, it's in life, it's in parenting, and it's unsustainable and it's also joyless.
I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. I wanted to take a quick moment to remind you that my next cookbook, Real Food Every Day, will be available in stores on December 29th. I've been working on this cookbook for about 2 years, and I sought to create one that would become a tool and a staple in your kitchen, not just a collector's item that was going to collect dust, but instead collect crumbs in its spine. I focused on creating recipes that any home cook could replicate in a timely manner with flavor profiles that we all have come to know and love. And guess what? I think I succeeded. So if you are listening to this before December 29th, you can pre-order Real Food Every Day anywhere books are sold, whether that's your favorite indie bookstore, Target, Amazon, you name it. If you're listening to this after December 29th, you can purchase it anytime right now. Yeah, I completely agree. I feel my hope is that, you know, I know there's many lessons I'm taking out of 2020 with me. And I do hope a lot of that trickles down into the corporate work world. And I think on my end, I am starting to see that there's more grace in getting things to people and spacing out your workday and working from home and being productive in those moments and then taking more time with your family. So I'm hoping that's one of the lasting lessons of 2020, at least in the work area, is that we've kind of been forced to realize what we were doing before is so unsustainable.
Yeah. I've been trying
done otherwise. It absolutely can still, there is productivity in gentle.
Oh, absolutely. I do corporate trainings, and it's a big shift for corporations to make. But like one of the rules that I have that I had to make lately since I switched to virtual trainings is that they can't do the trainings at lunch. Because, what was happening was that they were
Nobody
doing
wants
wellness
bad
trainings.
Sandwich.
We well, it also
own sandwiches to the bosses who think that's the draw for the lunch meeting. It's not.
But online, Michelle, they were doing the wellness trainings at lunch, and the employees had to. And I was always like, okay, so if you're making people work through lunch, then we need to talk because. The whole idea here is taking breaks and it is getting off of your screen. And so I'm not going to like come and talk and make your people be on their screens during lunchtime. So I think it's a bigger conversation. Like it's a cultural, it's a systematic, it's a like an organizational and then an individual conversation. So it's changing the system and it's changing your own behavior. So I look at both, but I would say the book is really more about like starting with kind of choices you can make. And I think coming back to that should to good, Michelle, is especially for holidays, is asking yourself like on your list of things to do, which ones are things that you feel that you should be doing versus which ones are things that you feel would be good?
So I'm going to give you mine really quick because this one kills me every year. And I think this will be the year I just finally put the nail in the coffin on it, which are holiday cards.
I'm so glad you said that. Let's talk about it.
The bane of my existence. I hate organizing the photo shoot and doing this perfect family picture when I'm like, everyone sees how we're doing online anyways. Anyone who's interested can hop on. And then I don't have anybody's addresses ever. I don't have one place I store them in.
For the record, I don't think we've actually done a card, 5 years?
Maybe six.
Six? Probably. But then we still talk about it.
But and you're feeling bad about it every year, clearly.
The minute that first holiday card comes in the mail, I really love getting them. I love that people are sending them. And I really do find joy in it. But the first, every freaking time a card comes, it's like guilt. You suck. They're going to think you didn't give them one. They're going to think you don't want to be their friend. And I'm just like, so this year I didn't even pretend in my mind I was going to try this year.
You did briefly.
Last year I felt like a real schmuck.
This is such a great example because I feel like I did a show recently on Should to Good Holiday, and it was like, let's just make a list of all the things that we feel that we should do at this time of year. And there was like five categories: decorating, gifting, cards, communications of any kinds, parties, which don't exist anymore, and like feeding people. Anyway, it was a long list, and I said, no wonder you're feeling like it's too much because you already had a full-time job and probably two or three, and now you're kind of adding this whole new set of tasks. Like that, of course, that feels like a lot. Of course, it feels impossible. So why don't we take that list and should to good it and take each item and say, is this something I feel I should be doing, or is it really good? Or if it's a should I get rid of it altogether, or can I make it a good? So with the card situation, I would say, Michelle, it really sounds to me like that is a should, and what the power is accepting that and really owning it. Yeah. And then when your cards, and like think about how much mental energy you've been spending, and I would argue wasting, on thinking about that and then feeling bad every time a card comes
every time. If four cards come in one day, it's four times. It's not like it was just like per day. It's per card, Robin.
Right. And I would say like it's like a waste of emotional and mental energy, but also just sad because, you know, it could be a great feeling to get those cards and to just accept the intention of which they were sent, which was not probably to like make you feel like a terrible person. You know, like I don't think anyone meant it that way.
I actually love getting them. Like, I mean,
right.
You know, seeing her friends and their families, it's great.
And maybe a good for you, Michelle, would be when you get a card to like send a quick, and maybe this isn't okay, but it's, can you, where is the good for you? It's getting the card. Would it be good for you to send a quick text to that person and be like, thank you for the card?
Yes. You know? That's beautiful. Would I have to make a note to clear my mind too? Like, we didn't send them this year.
No, I know, but like really, this is a very common thing. And I also like, Brad, do you feel bad about the cards? Do you feel bad that you're not sending them? No. No. I don't really know any men that feel bad about this. So women are carrying, I'm sorry if there are men please let me know if you're a man that is like spending emotional energy on whether you should have sent a holiday card. This is like emotional labor that women put on themselves that I am inviting you to step out of and to say like, my good is not sending cards. My good is feeling gratitude for these people that sent them to me.
Oh, Robin, you nailed it. That's exactly, I love that. That reframe is perfect.
And it's the same with everything. So like, if you're someone that does a tree, what is the good there? Is it getting an like, you know, I know people that feel bad every time they get a real tree because it's such a pain, but like they would feel guilty to get an artificial tree. And I, again, like so much mental energy, emotional waste. And why don't...
Internal struggle.
Yeah. Like, hey, you know what? For me, good... As much as I love like a real tree and we live in Christmas tree country here in Oregon and like I love that whole idea of it, but in the end it's messy and my husband's super allergic. So our good is like every time now I put that tree up, I feel zero guilt. And I'm like, yes, artificial tree. Good.
Yeah, and doesn't have to sneeze through the entire month.
No, I know. And then he doesn't snore every night of the holidays. So, you know, whether that's like cookie exchange, like cooking big meals, how you do service, if you donate, like religious services, participation in family events. Like there's so many things in the season. And I just want you to go through one by one and say like, is this a should or is this a good? And if it is a should I get rid of it? Can I get rid of it? Or is there a way to flip it and make it a good?
Right. I love that. I feel like taking stock, like this is such a tangible takeaway of like, what are the things that pop up? Like you said, parties or cookies or whatever, shouldn't a good, is this a should? And then, like you said, is it something we can take away? Or is it something I can, like you mentioned earlier, Robin, reimagine?
Yes.
Like not going to the nutcracker, but we can figure something else out. I love that. And I feel that that's something we've really leaned into this year is reimagining, like, you know, whether it's going to the movies.
Well, I think too, with this year, it's like, there's a lot of things, it's almost like the perfect year to do it because there's already a lot of things that are kind of out of our control that are kind of taken away anyway. So, you know,
yes,
so we have maybe just a smaller list of things that we can kind of evaluate. And then as we move forward, then we can kind of look at things as we kind of bring them back in.
Yeah, I was watching on Netflix, there's a new Taylor Swift special about her Folklore album. Have you seen that yet?
We haven't. The girls have kind of put it on momentarily.
Well, I made Andrew watch it and I was like, okay, let's just give Taylor Swift some credit for how freaking brilliant she is as a songwriter. Yeah. But in the beginning, whether you like Taylor Swift or not, at the beginning, she... Swift. Okay. Well, I think Neander, my husband, was not necessarily because of I'm like trying to teach him how amazing she is. So
Brad sings along to her earliest stuff.
I have a couple of kind of guilty pleasure Taylor Swift songs that if I'm alone in the car and they come on, I will belt them out.
Awesome. Well, Taylor Swift is a good for me. And I was like watching it. And at the beginning, she's talking about how she wrote this album at the beginning of quarantine when it made no sense to do it. It made no sense to release an album or to write new songs or anything. And she has this quote and she says, if we have to recalibrate everything, why not start with happiness?
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, yes. because this is the time, right? Like if we have to not do anything we thought we wanted to, what if we started with good? What if we started with, for the Nutcracker, I'm like, okay, what? Why am I so sad? What was it about it? Well, I actually loved dressing up with my daughter because I never do that. Mm-hmm. I loved drinking champagne at noon. Like, I'm just going to be honest. And then I loved like the cookie. We went to tea and we'd get like a bunch of treats. And I thought, okay, well, those were the good things. I can fully do that. So we're going to just get dressed up, drink champagne at noon, adults, not children, eat a bunch of treats and watch sparkling it on TV. Cider. Yeah.
See, I absolutely love that. Honestly, Robin, that is what our 2020 has been. Mm-hmm. Like we did that for 4th of July. You know, it was just the four of us, but we bought some fireworks. We went to the town over and got some fireworks and had like a late night party in our yard with the girls. And Cameron told me the next day, she's like, Mom, that was the best night of my life. Oh. And she just was so into it. And, you know, for Halloween this year, we didn't trick or treat, but we had two families that we are in a bubble with come over. We had a donut eating contest, socially distanced, like a candy hunt at night with flashlights. And it was, the girls both said, this was better than trick or treating. And I think that we get so caught up in what should be and what our experiences and what our kids' experience have to be that we're neglecting like the beauty. Your daughter is going to remember this Nutcracker more than any of the other ones. And she's going to love it. It is fabulous.
She'll have more fun because she doesn't have to just like sit there for 2 hours watching a ballet. Like that's not her favorite part either. And if we did this, you know, we have this forced pause this year, 2020. But what if we did that for, you know, the holidays are the great place to start, but what if you started doing should to good with wellness?
Right.
And with the way you are working and with the way you're parenting, and it really starts to help you to see like, where are the places that you are doing things because that's how you always did them, or that's how other people do them, or there's expectations that you think you should be doing it. And when you start to unravel it or recalibrate, like Tay-Tay says, and start with feeling good or start with joy or start with happiness, an incredible way to walk into the next year.
Right. It's a gift. And I think we're going to see that. I think, you know, we're going to find the people that took this year. And I know we've all had very different experiences. I feel very grateful for ours, even though, you know, it's been everyone's experienced this hardship of 2020 in different ways, some more than others. And I know that. But I do think we're going to see the people that leaned into the lessons and the people that are still like clawing for the old way and it has to be this, or, you know, trying to just like not move with it and learn from it and grow with it. And I think it's going to be interesting, the outcome of how that shifts our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to say, but I just think like, what if this pause was the most powerful thing of our lifetime? Not all the bad parts, because we know that we are very well aware of all the bad things we are reminded on a daily basis. But what if like we also, this pause created space to ask different questions and to pay attention to something else that was there all along that we were distracted from. And that's my hope. And I think you can start with something as simple as a holiday card or as a cookie decorating, or, you know, I'm like, oh wait, Trader Joe's has cookie decorating. Okay. I'm like a food blogger and I don't know what I am anymore, but I'm like, hey, everybody, just FYI, I ordered my turkey, my whole Thanksgiving from the store, and I'm buying this cookie decorating because those are not my goods. Those were my shits.
It's perfect. Well, and I think when we really realize growth comes out of adversity, people don't grow when everything's perfect. There's no push or need to. So when you look at 2020 and what it's brought, I think that growth is such an opportunity. And like you said, it's how we're reframing things, like the holidays and, you know, making our should to good lists and reframing on like our values and what's important and what we want to move forward with. I really love that.
And it's full circle in our conversation, because I always tell people it can be both. Like, yeah, you can appreciate this pause and opportunity for growth and starting to identify your should to good. And also, you can feel disappointed and you can feel rage or sadness or grief at literally on the same day at the same time. And you could, because you're a human being, like, you don't have to be all or nothing.
That's honestly what my motto has been, or maybe not motto, my biggest lesson this year is that gratitude, like the deepest of gratitude and misery and pain and annoyance and frustration, they're not mutually exclusive.
No, you can experience them at the same time.
Right. And, you know, it doesn't take away from one or the other. Like, you can have both.
Mm-hmm. So I hope that people can internalize that more. It would be really great.
Yeah. I think the people that are paying attention and being, growing into their consciousness are.
I hope so. I think our world really needs that individually and as a collective.
Well, and I find it's interesting because I feel we need to be more vocal about it, but I feel like so much of the vocal voices that we hear end up being super, being the more polarizing voices, or they aren't the most productive voices. And I think we just need to be loud and obnoxious with the, like, good lines. I don't know.
That might kind of defeat the purpose.
But. Yeah, I know.
Well, I would love to invite your community and your listeners to help us with this, because this is something I've really been thinking about going forward into the new year. It's like, there's some reasons for that, Michelle. I mean, from the way the algorithms are structured on social media, the more polarizing you are, the more that that post will be seen. And you know that perfectly well. And then in the news media, the more doom and gloom, the more clicks. And so we've created a system in the last year, really, from like a technical standpoint.
The more you can emotionally trigger somebody.
Yes.
The better, which is like, how about the more we like rationally trigger somebody, the
right.
better. The more thought provoking and conscious we trigger somebody,
right.
the better.
So I want to create like a think tank. I used to do a bunch of policy work. So I'm like, where's the think tank that's coming up with a solution to this problem? Because I actually think most people don't want to live in a world where everything is so polarizing and like the extremists are getting the most attention. And there's a problem with that for so many reasons, not just political extremists, but like wellness extremists, for example.
Absolutely. And
so I'm open, you know, I have this conversation on my podcast. I have this conversation on my Instagram, and it's like, well, what do I do? Because I don't want to opt out, and I don't want you to opt out, Michelle. I'm so glad you started this, and Brad, I'm so glad you started this. We need something
about,
else. Like, what do we do?
What we're talking about right now is exactly why I finally decided to start this podcast. We had left Sedona, and I just have been feeling so deflated within, you know, social media, but the wellness community and food and all of that. And I just wanted to take that power back to getting something more meaningful out there and having these conversations. So I'm with you. That is literally what spurred me to finally decide to do this.
Well, I'm thinking about it, and I'm not letting it go, because I think for the health of our individual health and then our collective health, being able to recalibrate where the attention is going is really, really important. And so short of just getting on the internet and like yelling rage and then like saying like, just kidding, I didn't mean that. What I really wanted you to hear me say is gentle is the new perfect, but I needed to get your attention.
Totally.
So now that I have it for 5 seconds, self-compassion, you know?
And then like,
No.
I will be part of that think tank with you. Because
absolutely,
it's honestly what I feel passionate about, and Brad will attest to that. Yeah. I talk about it daily.
Yeah.
Well, and there are a lot of us out there, but I think we are getting drowned out, and some of us are giving up. So well, I think this
just go topless on social media and do a big post and get all the attention.
But even that, Michelle, I think like if I were to do like a body positive post in my underwear,
yeah,
I would get, there would be a lot of attention on that post. And not to say that I'm fully in support of my body positive people out there. But I also think like, is that the only way to get people to pay attention to what I'm saying? So I think if you're listening, to just think about like where you're putting your attention and to know that if you don't feel comfortable in the extremes, then you're doing it right. Oh, and that you can find something in the middle. I call it the power middle or the magic middle, like that is probably a better place to be.
But yeah. I think most people are there. I mean, most people are, you know, more moderate and they have common sense and, you know, they're not these, you know, polarizing. They're not the ends and the extremes.
I think the ends are also come out of a place of ego or feelings that people didn't move. I don't know. I think that there's something that has created this void that's trying to be filled. I don't really know what I'm trying to say.
Well, it is complex. Like it's psychological. There are reasons people respond, but it's also algorithmic. It's like literally the way that these platforms are being engineered. So some of this, a huge amount of this responsibility is on the engineers of these platforms. And I'm talking to you, if you're listening, I see what you're doing and I don't approve, but you know, then it also is psychologically like what people respond to and how do we undo some of that and how do we educate a little bit and offer an alternative? Because Brad, like you said, I actually think most people don't feel like wellness extremes speaks to them, but they actually feel like they're doing something wrong if that doesn't appeal to them, because that's kind of the only model they're seeing.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree.
Well, I think back to like workouts or diet. I'm like, I have no interest in spending 2 hours a day working out. Like, I just don't. Like, if that is the way to go, no wonder people, if that is the message that we're sending out there, no wonder people have a hard time sticking with a routine when you're saying like, this is the bar you must reach.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
No, it's not. And so it's like those small, simple shifts, should to good, finding what works for you and then being confident in that. And then confident MySpace.
Bring MySpace back. And then we can like just have fun on everyone's pages.
I don't know. I do think there'll be more shifts coming in the next year. I know that I don't know what it will be, but I plan to be there for it. And I hope that you are too, because that's my biggest fear is people just opting out because they're so tired of it.
Totally. No, that's exactly it. I think we can grow and I think it's how we use it. And here's the thing, at some point, these platforms, when you start driving away all of your content creators that are creating real valuable content, they're going elsewhere. Hence me moving to focus much of my work on a podcast platform and not Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what you're going to be left with on these platforms is going to be garbage. So it's coming and hopefully they recognize that and realize that there's more value and power in cultivating more quality. So,
yeah. And if you're, you know, those of you listening, like you get to vote with your attention. And I always come back to that pause, pay attention. Like your attention is really one of your most valuable assets. And so where you're putting it matters a lot.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, somewhat intentional about that, that's like the start of the change.
Well, and I think that what you just said applies to the holidays. Where are we going to put our attention? What is of value to us? And, you know, stop letting it be dictated by whether it's an algorithm or consumerism or even
or guilt.
Guilt.
Right?
Guilt. Oh, yeah. Guilt. I was born guilty. Let me just say.
That is the obvious. Oh, and guilt might be a really good arrow pointing you toward a should. I mean, that can be really powerful to say, oh, this is interesting. Like, I felt really guilty about this when no one told me to.
Right.
What can I do about that?
I like that.
Yeah.
Robin, I adore every time we talk. I hope we can hang out at a Howard Johnson again soon.
Oh my gosh. Can we?
Yes. I say we just planned a room together at the next expo together just because we can.
Maybe we can do retreats. We could do retreats or something, but maybe not.
That's way better. Let's do that.
And I'd love for people to come. I'm on Instagram at Real Food Whole Life and then realfoodwholelife.com and then the Feel Good Effect podcast. I'd love to hear your shit to good. If you tag Michelle, how do you like people to tag you? The Get Wealthy tag or
Whole Smiths? Either at the Whole Smiths or at Get Wealthy podcast, either one.
So tell us your shit to good. I love hearing those.
Okay.
That's great. Like that.
Yeah.
For holiday. That's
perfect. We will tag it. That makes me really excited. I think it's going to be very thought provoking and a very tangible, helpful step.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Robin's book is available anywhere books are sold. Get it now. No,
buy it.
Buy a copy for your mother and your friends. But really, Robin, I love your book. It is everything that's the way that wellness should be going. These are the conversations we should be having around it. And I love that I feel like you're one of the pioneers of it.
Well, thank you. And Michelle and Brad, thank you for the work you're doing and for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Robin.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Get Wealthy. If you liked what you heard, we are so appreciative if you subscribe, rate, review, show us the love. It helps us to grow bigger and stronger and better and provide you with just that many more resources. So thank you again for tuning in and we will see you next week.